Hello friends, in today's episode we're going to read Feeling is the Secret by Neville Goddard. Neville Goddard was an English writer, speaker, and mystic who lived in the 1900s. He wrote more than 10 books and gave frequent lectures about the power of the mind, and specifically the power of our feelings and our imagination. How in essence the imagination is its own real world that casts a shadow on this 3D world that you're living in. What I personally love about Neville is the way he writes. His specific resonance and his unique models of reality are very practical, very direct, and very precise. When you listen to this book, you'll be able to pick up concepts and ideas that you can start applying right away. Sometimes it's one sentence from Neville that just hits home, and you can live on that sentence. Of all the authors that talk about the power of the mind, I keep coming back to Neville, and I know many people have had the same experience. We've read all the metaphysical books out there, and then one day, you come across Neville, and you go, "Ah, where were you, my friend? This is exactly what I needed." Feeling is the Secret is one of Neville's most famous books. It's a short book, and its power lies in its simplicity. This is going to be a unique reading of the book. I'm going to read each chapter, followed by my own commentary. Enjoy this reading of Feeling is the Secret. Feeling is the Secret by Neville Goddard. Foreword. This book is concerned with the art of realizing your desire. It gives you an account of the mechanism used in the production of the visible world. It is a small book, but not slight. There is a treasure in it, a clearly defined road to the realization of your dreams. Were it possible to carry conviction to another by means of reasoned arguments and detailed instances, this book would be many times its size. It is seldom possible, however, to do so by means of written statements or arguments, since to the suspended judgment it always seems plausible to say that the author was dishonest or deluded, and therefore his evidence was tainted. Consequently, I have purposely omitted all arguments and testimonials, and simply challenged the open-minded reader to practice the law of consciousness as revealed in this book. Personal success will prove far more convincing than all the books that could be written on the subject. Neville. So before we go to chapter one, I just want to add some of my comments here. What he's saying here about, to the suspended judgment, it always seems plausible to say that the author was dishonest or deluded. I can relate so much to this. When I was first starting to read Abraham Hicks and The Science of Getting Rich and The Secret and all these famous books in the law of attraction space, I kept coming up against the doubts of, does this actually work? Did this author genuinely write this book from the truth of his heart, or did this author write this book to make money? And I kept seeking for some sort of evidence that would convince me that, yes, Abraham Hicks, everything they're saying is absolutely true. Or, yes, Rhonda Byrne, everything she's saying is true. Or Jack Canfield, or, you know, put your favorite author here. And eventually, I came to the same realization as what Neville is talking about here, which is that to the suspended judgment, it always seems plausible to say that someone was lying or someone made it up. So the goal is not to nitpick every single page of every book that you read, but simply to test it for yourself. And I love that Neville consistently emphasizes that. Test it. Test it. And anything you read that resonates, immediately put it into practice. Chapter 1, Law and Its Operation. The world and all within it is man's conditioned consciousness objectified. Consciousness is the cause as well as the substance of the entire world. So it is to consciousness that we must turn if we would discover the secret of creation. Knowledge of the law of consciousness and the method of operating this law will enable you to accomplish all you desire in life. Armed with a working knowledge of this law, you can build and maintain an ideal world. Consciousness is the one and only reality, not figuratively, but actually. This reality may, for the sake of clarity, be likened onto a stream which is divided into two parts, the conscious and the subconscious. In order to intelligently operate the law of consciousness, it is necessary to understand the relationship between the conscious and the subconscious. The conscious is personal and selective. The subconscious is impersonal and non-selective. The conscious is the realm of effect. The subconscious is the realm of cause. These two aspects are the male and female divisions of consciousness. The conscious is male, the subconscious is female. The conscious generates ideas and impresses these ideas on the subconscious. The subconscious receives ideas and gives form and expression to them. By this law, first conceiving an idea and then impressing the idea conceived on the subconscious, all things evolve out of consciousness. And without this sequence, there is not anything made that is made. The conscious impresses the subconscious, while the subconscious expresses all that is impressed upon it. The subconscious does not originate ideas, but accepts as true those which the conscious mind feels to be true, and, in a way known only to itself, objectifies the accepted ideas. Therefore, through his power to imagine and feel, and his freedom to choose the idea he will entertain, man has control over creation. Control of the subconscious is accomplished through control of your ideas and feelings. The mechanism of creation is hidden in the very depth of the subconscious, the female aspect or womb of creation. The subconscious transcends reason and is independent of induction. It contemplates a feeling as a fact existing within itself, and on this assumption proceeds to give expression to it. The creative process begins with an idea, and its cycle runs its course as a feeling and ends in a volition to act. Ideas are impressed on the subconscious through the medium of feeling. No idea can be impressed on the subconscious until it is felt, but once felt, be it good, bad, or indifferent, it must be expressed. Feeling is the one and only medium through which ideas are conveyed to the subconscious. Therefore, the man who does not control his feeling may easily impress the subconscious with undesirable states. By control of feeling is not meant restraint or suppression of your feeling, but rather the disciplining of self to imagine and entertain only such feeling as contributes to your happiness. Control of your feeling is all important to a full and happy life. Never entertain an undesirable feeling, nor think sympathetically about wrong in any shape or form. Do not dwell on the imperfection of yourself or others. To do so is to impress the subconscious with these limitations. What you do not want done unto you, do not feel that it is done unto you or another. This is the whole law of a full and happy life. Everything else is commentary. Every feeling makes a subconscious impression, and unless it is counteracted by a more powerful feeling of an opposite nature, must be expressed. The dominant of two feelings is the one expressed. I am healthy is a stronger feeling than I will be healthy. To feel I will be is to confess I am not. I am is stronger than I am not. What you feel you are always dominates what you feel you would like to be. Therefore, to be realized, the wish must be felt as a state that is rather than a state that is not. Sensation precedes manifestation and is the foundation upon which all manifestation rests. Be careful of your moods and feelings, for there is an unbroken connection between your feelings and your visible world. Your body is an emotional filter and bears the unmistakable marks of your prevalent emotions. Emotional disturbances, especially suppressed emotions, are the causes of all disease. To feel intensely about a wrong without voicing or expressing that feeling is the beginning of disease, dis-ease in both body and environment. Do not entertain the feeling of regret or failure, for frustration or detachment from your objective results in disease. Think feelingly only of the state you desire to realize. Feeling the reality of the state sought and living and acting on that conviction is the way of all seeming miracles. All changes of expression are brought about through a change of feeling. A change of feeling is a change of destiny. All creation occurs in the domain of the subconscious. What you must acquire then is a reflective control of the operation of the subconscious, that is, control of your ideas and feelings. Chance or accident is not responsible for the things that happen to you, nor is predestined fate the author of your fortune or misfortune. Your subconscious impressions determine the conditions of your world. The subconscious is not selective, it is impersonal, and no respecter of persons. The subconscious is not concerned with the truth or falsity of your feeling. It always accepts as true that which you feel to be true. Feeling is the ascent of the subconscious to the truth of that which is declared to be true. Because of this quality of the subconscious, there is nothing impossible to man. Whatever the mind of man can conceive and feel as true, the subconscious can and must objectify. Your feelings create the pattern from which your world is fashioned, and a change of feeling is a change of pattern. The subconscious never fails to express that which has been impressed upon it. The moment it receives an impression, it begins to work out the ways of its expression. The moment it receives an impression, it begins to work out the ways of its expression. It accepts the feeling impressed upon it, your feeling, as a fact existing within itself, and immediately sets about to produce in the outer or objective world the exact likeness of that feeling. The subconscious never alters the accepted beliefs of man. It outpictures them to the last detail, whether or not they are beneficial. To impress the subconscious with the desirable state, you must assume the feeling that would be yours had you already realized your wish. In defining your objective, you must be concerned only with the objective itself. The manner of expression or the difficulties involved are not to be considered by you. To think feelingly on any state impresses it on the subconscious. Therefore, if you dwell on difficulties, barriers, or delay, the subconscious, by its very non-selective nature, accepts the feeling of difficulties and obstacles as your request and proceeds to produce them in your outer world. The subconscious is the womb of creation. It receives the idea onto itself through the feelings of man. It never changes the idea received, but always gives it form. Hence, the subconscious outpictures the idea in the image and likeness of the feeling received. To feel a state as hopeless or impossible is to impress the subconscious with the idea of failure. Although the subconscious faithfully serves man, it must not be inferred that the relation is that of a servant to a master, as was anciently conceived. The ancient prophets called it the slave and servant of man. Saint Paul personified it as a woman and said, "The woman should be subject to man in everything." The subconscious does serve man and faithfully gives form to his feelings. However, the subconscious has a distinct distaste for compulsion and responds to persuasion rather than to command. Consequently, it resembles the beloved wife more than the servant. The husband is head of the wife may not be true of man and woman in their earthly relationship, but it is true of the conscious and the subconscious, or the male and female aspects of consciousness. The mystery to which Paul referred when he wrote, "This is a great mystery. He that loveth his wife loveth himself, and they two shall be one flesh," is simply the mystery of consciousness. Consciousness is really one and undivided, but for creation's sake, it appears to be divided into two. The conscious, objective, or male aspect truly is the head and dominates the subconscious, subjective, or female aspect. However, this leadership is not that of the tyrant, but of the lover. So by assuming the feeling that would be yours were you already in possession of your objective, the subconscious is moved to build the exact likeness of your assumption. Your desires are not subconsciously accepted until you assume the feeling of their reality. For only through feeling is an idea subconsciously accepted, and only through this subconscious acceptance is it ever expressed. Your desires are not subconsciously accepted until you assume the feeling of their reality. For only through feeling is an idea subconsciously accepted, and only through this subconscious acceptance is it ever expressed. Guys, this may be the most important paragraph written by Neville. Sorry to interrupt the narration, but you need to hear this again. Your desires are not subconsciously accepted until you assume the feeling of their reality. For only through feeling is an idea subconsciously accepted, and only through this subconscious acceptance is it ever expressed. It is easier to ascribe your feeling to events in the world than to admit that the conditions of the world reflect your feeling. However, it is eternally true that the outside mirrors the inside. As within, so without, as above, so below, as below, so above, as within, so without, as without, so within. Correspondence, the second of the seven principles of Hermes Trismegistus. A man can receive nothing unless it is given him from heaven, John 3:27, and the kingdom of heaven is within you, Luke 17:21. Nothing comes from without, all things come from within, from the subconscious. It is impossible for you to see other than the contents of your consciousness. Your world in its every detail is your consciousness objectified. Objective states bear witness of subconscious impressions. A change of impression results in a change of expression. The subconscious accepts as true that which you feel as true. And because creation is the result of subconscious impressions, you, by your feeling, determine creation. You are already that which you want to be, and your refusal to believe this is the only reason you do not see it. To seek on the outside for that which you do not feel you are is to seek in vain, for we never find that which we want, we find only that which we are. In short, you express and have only that which you are conscious of being or possessing. To him that hath it is given, Matthew 13:12, denying the evidence of the senses and appropriating the feeling of the wish fulfilled is the way to the realization of your desire. Mastery of self-control of your thoughts and feelings is your highest achievement. Mastery of self-control of your thoughts and feelings is your highest achievement. However, until perfect self-control is attained, so that in spite of appearances you feel all that you want to feel, use sleep and prayer to aid you in realizing your desired states. These are the two gateways into the subconscious. So that's it for chapter 1. Before we go to chapter 2, I'm going to just do a little bit of commentary. This chapter is glorious. There's so much beautiful things here. The conscious impresses the subconscious while the subconscious expresses all that is impressed upon it. You know, in the spiritual circles, it's kind of funny. Sometimes we talk about, oh, I felt this thing in my subconscious, or, oh, I'm doing shadow work and I'm going deep into my subconscious. But the whole point is that you're only conscious of your conscious state. So the goal is not to go into your subconscious and start rearranging the furniture there. The goal, the only goal here, according to Neville, is to work on your consciousness. Use your conscious mind to impress the feeling like a stamp, like a mold into hot wax. You impress the feeling, and the subconscious will receive it automatically. This is not something you have to try. You do it every day. When you feel angry at someone, when you feel resentful at someone, when you go to sleep grumpy because your day went to shit, that's you impressing your subconscious. You're not doing any technique, but you're doing something better than a technique. You're feeling it. You're feeling the way you're feeling, and that impression goes directly to your subconscious. So this is why Neville says, mastery of self-control of your thoughts and feeling is your highest achievement. You want to master your thoughts and feeling consciously. Not to try and go into your subconscious and try to dig stuff out there. You just want to be in every moment of your day fully conscious of what you're thinking and especially what you're feeling. But like he says, until perfect self-control is attained, you can use sleep and prayer to aid you. Okay, so because when you go to sleep, you're in a very different state, you're in this half-awake, half-asleep state, that's a great way to impress your subconscious. But ideally, you're doing that in every moment, every day. And of course, no one here is perfect at that. But I gotta tell you, when you have even 10% more control over what you choose to think, how you choose to feel, how you choose to flow in the world, makes a huge difference. Makes a huge difference because, first of all, you're in your center more of the time. What do I mean by that? When you're a kid or you're a teenager or you're quite immature, your center is very easily swayed and pulled out of you. So imagine there's this core part of you in the center of your being, like a white light. Your self-worth exists there. Your self-esteem exists there. Your concept of self, that's what it is. Okay, so it's your center. And ideally, it's in your center. Just visualize your self-esteem, your self-worth, your self-love as this bundle of white light, and it's centered in you, in your body. Okay? Now someone comes along and says something mean to you. They say, your face is ugly. Okay? Now, if you're a kid or a teenager, and I don't mean to pick on teenagers here, but just if you're not as mature yet, you will be affected by that comment. Someone saying something mean to you, instantly your center is pulled out of you, like a rug pulled underneath you. And you go, oh my God, they said this about me. You feel hurt, you feel ashamed, you feel like you're not good looking enough. You know, you allow someone else to move your center, okay? Now what happens when you become an adult? And not just an adult, but a self-actualized adult who has control over their feelings and their thoughts. Here's what happens. Someone says something to you, and it just bounces right off you. Because you know who you are. You know your self-worth. You know what you're worth. You know yourself so deeply that some random stranger or even some family member saying something to you, you don't give it any extra weight than what it's worth. And maybe it affects you for a little bit, right? Maybe it nudges your center and you feel, oh, that felt hurtful, or that was weird that they said that to me. But very quickly, because you have control over your thoughts and feelings and you're conscious about it, you bring yourself back to the center. You bring yourself back to that feeling of, I know who I am. I know what I'm worth. A million people could be saying bad things about me, but because I know I am good, that's all that matters. And this is the relationship between you and you. This is the number one thing. This is why everyone talks about self-concept and how important it is. Self-concept, a positive self-concept, is what allows you to surf life amidst all its chaos and all the weird people out there. There's a lot of beautiful people out there, but there's also lots of mixed energies. Let's put it that way. If you have a very good center, a firm center, you can move through life and it doesn't matter what someone says or someone does or someone doesn't say or doesn't do. you can hold on to your core and you can move through the world with confidence, with grace. So tying this back to Neville, this is where control of thoughts and feelings is your highest achievement because it allows you to maintain your center. There's another interesting phrase here. You are already that which you want to be, and your refusal to believe this is the only reason you do not see it. You are already that which you want to be. If you have a desire for something, that means you're already aware of that state to some degree. The only difference is you're looking at it from a place of lack. You're looking at it from a place of, that can never be me. You're looking at it from a place of, yeah, so-and-so can do this, but not me. But what Neville here is saying is, you are already that which you want to be. The only reason you don't see it is your refusal to believe it. And think about your life. How many times in your life have you had the experience of having difficulty with something or thinking you have a difficult time with something? And the moment you start believing that you can do something, all the difficulty falls away and you just get to work. You just get to work and it happens for you because you believe it. The only difference is you believing it, believing something can happen, believing you're capable of doing something, believing you have the capability, the skills, the talents. It all starts with you. It all starts with you. There's no one out there that can come into your life and say, you are confident, and then suddenly you become confident. It has to start from the inside out. He says, it is impossible for you to see other than the contents of your consciousness. I love this phrase. It is impossible for you to see other than the contents of your consciousness, meaning you live in a bubble. You live in a bubble, and everything you're seeing, everything you're feeling, everything you're perceiving is all wrapped in this bubble of beliefs and self-concept. You are never seeing reality objectively. Neville says, your world in its every detail is your consciousness objectified. Objective states bear witness of subconscious impressions. A change of impression results in a change of expression. Oh, this was good as well. The subconscious never alters the accepted beliefs of man. It outpictures them to the last detail, whether or not they are beneficial. The subconscious never alters the accepted beliefs of men, meaning your subconscious will never argue with you. If you say to yourself, I'm stupid, unfortunately, the subconscious is not going to say, that's not true, you're very smart. That is the role of your conscious mind. You have to say to yourself that you're smart, you're intelligent, you're capable. So never, ever, ever depend on the subconscious to disagree with you or to argue with you or to give you something that you consciously have not impressed upon it. You must do it consciously. You must consciously impress your feeling of confidence, your feeling of wealth, your feeling of love. And the subconscious will agree with everything. So you can think of it as a disadvantage because your subconscious won't correct your mistakes, or you can think of it as a huge advantage that you can tell your subconscious anything. And if you do it with enough feeling and belief, by law, it will outpicture it to the last detail. Neville says, the subconscious never fails to express that which has been impressed upon it. Think feelingly only of the state you desire to realize. What you feel you are always dominates what you feel you would like to be. Okay, this is the story of everyone's life. Everyone can relate to this. You want to be someone, you would like to be something, you would like to do something, you would like to achieve something, but what you feel you are will always dominate what you would like to be. This sentence alone, if you can imprint this into your mind, what you feel you are always dominates what you feel you would like to be. So if anything is to be realized, if anything is to be manifested, you have to feel you are it right here, right now. Neville says, the wish must be felt as a state that is, rather than a state that is not. Sensation precedes manifestation and is the foundation upon which all manifestation rests. Be careful of your moods and feelings, for there is an unbroken connection between your feelings and your visible world. This is also such an amazing sentence. There is an unbroken connection between your feelings and your visible world. I would just study the connection. This is what I've been doing for the last 5-6 years, and it's been the greatest teacher of my life. Simply studying the connection between my feelings, my thoughts, and my results. Or as Neville says, your visible world. You could not read any books about manifestation. You could not read any books from Neville for the rest of time. And if you just study the connection between your feelings and your moods and how your day flows, you will learn so much. You will learn so much. First, you will learn that if you wake up grumpy and if you don't do something about that, you're not going to have a great day. Ever. Why? Because there is an unbroken connection between your feelings and your visible world. And this is something that you have to cultivate every day, every moment of every day, until it becomes easy, until it becomes habitual. At some point, it becomes a habit, and then you don't have to vigilantly guard your mind because your mind has been trained to think a certain way, to feel a certain way. It's all training, it's all habit. But in the beginning, yes, it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort. So lean into that. Don't shy away from this work. This is the most important work you could be doing for your mind. Neville says, every feeling makes a subconscious impression, and unless it is counteracted by a more powerful feeling of an opposite nature, it must be expressed. So the metaphor I'm thinking here is magnets. Imagine you have 100 magnets. 50 of them are pulling you in one direction, 50 of them are pulling you in another direction. If you can just get 51 magnets pointing in the direction you want, you've already won the game. Okay? You just need the majority, the dominant impression to be pointed in one direction. Let me repeat Neville. Every feeling makes a subconscious impression, and unless it is counteracted by a more powerful feeling of an opposite nature, okay, it must be expressed. So what we're trying to do every day is make sure your most powerful feeling is the one you want to impress on your subconscious. The most powerful feeling. You're going to feel all sorts of things every day. This is so normal. Okay, we're not trying to reach a total perfection here because you are human. You're going to feel anger sometimes. You're going to feel sadness sometimes. You're going to feel resentment. The goal is that your most powerful feeling that dominates your entire day is one of joy, of wealth, appreciation, love, beauty, faith, trust. As Neville says, the dominant of two feelings is the one expressed. The dominant of two feelings is the one expressed. Meditate on this. Just meditate on this sentence alone. The dominant of two feelings is the one expressed. You can do so much with just that one sentence if you apply it. Feeling is the one and only medium through which ideas are conveyed to the subconscious. Okay, so it's not thoughts. It's not thoughts. That's why affirmations can work beautifully for some people and they work not at all for other people. I would guess, the people that they work for are the ones that are injecting feeling into the affirmations. But you could just inject feeling without any affirmation. It's the feeling that matters above all. As Neville says, feeling is the one and only medium through which ideas are conveyed to the subconscious. So if you're going to go by Neville's word here, if we're going to trust Neville here, and I do trust Neville, remember, it's feeling. It's not thoughts. It's not thoughts. It's not really affirmations. It's the feeling that is produced by the affirmation. No idea can be impressed on the subconscious until it is felt. But once felt, be it good, bad, or indifferent, it must be expressed. Again, no idea can be impressed on the subconscious. If you've been visualizing your mind off for 20 hours, just visualizing something, but until it is felt, it will not be expressed. The conscious is personal and selective. The subconscious is impersonal and non-selective. That's the key right there. It's all about using your conscious mind. That's the work. Using your conscious mind to select what you want to think and feel, and then feel it, and the subconscious will receive that impression. All right, that's it for chapter one. Let's continue with chapter two. Chapter two, sleep. Sleep, the life that occupies one third of our stay on earth, is the natural door into the subconscious. So it is with sleep that we are now concerned. The conscious two-thirds of our life on earth is measured by the degree of attention we give sleep. Our understanding of and delight in what sleep has to bestow will cause us night after night to set out for it as though we were keeping an appointment with a lover. In a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falleth upon man, in slumbering upon the bed, then he openeth the ears of men and sealeth their instruction. Job 33. It is in sleep and in prayer, a state akin to sleep, that man enters the subconscious to make his impressions and receive his instructions. In these states, the conscious and subconscious are creatively joined. The male and female become one flesh. Sleep is the time when the male or conscious mind churns from the world of sense to seek its lover or subconscious self. The subconscious, unlike the woman of the world who marries her husband to change him, has no desire to change the conscious, waking state, but loves it as it is and faithfully reproduces its likeness in the outer world of form. The conditions and events of your life are your children, formed from the molds of your subconscious impressions in sleep. They are made in the image and likeness of your innermost feeling, that they may reveal you to yourself. As in heaven, so on earth. Matthew 6:10. As in the subconscious, so on earth. Whatever you have in consciousness as you go to sleep is the measure of your expression in the waking two-thirds of your life on earth. Let me read that again. Whatever you have in consciousness as you go to sleep is the measure of your expression in the waking two-thirds of your life on earth. Nothing stops you from realizing your objective save your failure to feel that you are already that which you wish to be, or that you are already in possession of the thing sought. Your subconscious gives form to your desires only when you feel your wish fulfilled. The unconsciousness of sleep is the normal state of the subconscious, because all things come from within yourself, and your conception of yourself determines that which comes. You should always feel the wish fulfilled before you drop off to sleep. You never draw out of the deep of yourself that which you want. You always draw that which you are, and you are that which you feel yourself to be, as well as that which you feel is true of others. You never draw out of the deep of yourself that which you want. You always draw that which you are, and you are that which you feel yourself to be, as well as that which you feel as true of others. To be realized, then, the wish must be resolved into the feeling of being, or having, or witnessing the state sought. This is accomplished by assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled. The feeling which comes in response to the question, how would I feel were my wish realized, is the feeling which should monopolize and immobilize your attention as you relax into sleep. You must be in the consciousness of being or having that which you want to be or to have before you drop off to sleep. Once asleep, man has no freedom of choice. His entire slumber is dominated by his last waking concept of self. Let me read that again. His entire slumber is dominated by his last waking concept of self. It follows, therefore, that he should always assume the feeling of accomplishment and satisfaction before he retires in sleep. Come before me with singing and thanksgiving. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Your mood prior to sleep defines your state of consciousness as you enter into the presence of your everlasting lover, the subconscious. She sees you exactly as you feel yourself to be. If, as you prepare for sleep, you assume and maintain the consciousness of success by feeling, "I am successful," you must be successful. Lie flat on your back, with your head on a level with your body. Feel as you would were you in possession of your wish, and quietly relax into unconsciousness. He that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. Nevertheless, he giveth his beloved sleep. The subconscious never sleeps. Sleep is the door through which the conscious, waking mind passes to be creatively joined to the subconscious. Sleep conceals the creative act, while the objective world reveals it. In sleep, man impresses the subconscious with his conception of himself. What more beautiful description of this romance of the conscious and subconscious is there than that told in the Song of Solomon? By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him, and I not let him go, until I had brought him into my mother's house, and into the chamber of her that conceived me. Preparing to sleep, you feel yourself into the state of the answered wish, and then relax into unconsciousness. Your realized wish is he whom you seek. By night, on your bed, you seek the feeling of the wish fulfilled, that you may take it with you into the chamber of her that conceived you, into sleep, or the subconscious which gave you form, that this wish also may be given expression. This is the way to discover and conduct your wishes into the subconscious. Feel yourself in the state of the realized wish, and quietly drop off to sleep. Night after night, you should assume the feeling of being, having, and witnessing that which you seek to be, possess, or see manifested. Never go to sleep feeling discouraged or dissatisfied. Never sleep in the consciousness of failure. This is so important, guys. Never sleep feeling discouraged or dissatisfied. We're going to talk about this in the commentary. Your subconscious, whose natural state is sleep, sees you as you believe yourself to be. And whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, the subconscious will faithfully embody your belief. As you feel, so do you impress her. And she, the perfect lover, gives form to these impressions and outpictures them as the children of her beloved. Thou art all fair, my love. There is no spot in thee, Song of Solomon, is the attitude of mind to adopt before dropping off to sleep. Disregard appearances and feel that things are as you wish them to be. For he calleth things that are not seen as though they were, and the unseen becomes seen. Romans 4:17. To assume the feeling of satisfaction is to call conditions into being which will mirror satisfaction. Signs follow, they do not precede. Proof that you are will follow the consciousness that you are. It will not precede it. You are an eternal dreamer, dreaming non-eternal dreams. Your dreams take form as you assume the feeling of their reality. Do not limit yourself to the past. Knowing that nothing is impossible to consciousness, begin to imagine states beyond the experiences of the past. Whatever the mind of man can imagine, man can realize. All objective, visible states were first subjective, invisible states, and you called them into visible by assuming the feeling of their reality. The creative process is first imagining, and then believing the state imagined. Always imagine and expect the best. The world cannot change until you change your conception of it. As within, so without. Nations, as well as people, are only that which you believe them to be. No matter what the problem is, no matter where it is, no matter whom it concerns, you have no one to change but yourself. And you have neither opponent nor helper in bringing about the change within yourself. You have nothing to do but convince yourself of the truth of that which you desire to see manifested. As soon as you succeed in convincing yourself of the reality of the state sought, results follow to confirm your fixed belief. You never suggest to another the state which you desire to see him express. Instead, you convince yourself that he is already that which you desire him to be. Realization of your wish is accomplished by assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled. You cannot fail unless you fail to convince yourself of the reality of your wish. A change of belief is confirmed by a change of expression. Every night as you drop off to sleep, feel satisfied and spotless, for your subjective lover always forms the objective world in the image and likeness of your conception of it, the conception defined by your feeling. The waking two-thirds of your life on earth ever corroborates or bears witness to your subconscious impressions. The actions and events of the day are effects, they are not causes. Free will is only freedom of choice. Choose ye this day whom you shall serve, Joshua 24:15, is your freedom to choose the kind of mood you assume, but the expression of the mood is the secret of the subconscious. The subconscious receives impressions only through the feelings of man, and in a way known only to itself, gives these impressions form and expression. The actions of man are determined by his subconscious impressions. His illusion of free will, his belief in freedom of action, is but ignorance of the causes which make him act. He thinks himself free because he has forgotten the link between himself and the event. Man awake is under compulsion to express his subconscious impressions. If in the past he unwisely impressed himself, then let him begin to change his thought and feeling, for only as he does so will he change his world. Do not waste one moment in regret, for to think feelingly of the mistakes of the past is to reinfect yourself. Let the dead bury the dead. Matthew 8:22. Churn from appearances and assume the feeling that would be yours were you already the one you wish to be. Feeling a state produces that state. The part you play on the world stage is determined by your conception of yourself. By feeling your wish fulfilled and quietly relaxing to sleep, you cast yourself in a star role to be played on earth tomorrow, and while asleep, you are rehearsed and instructed in your part. Oh, this is so good. By feeling your wish fulfilled and quietly relaxing into sleep, you cast yourself in a star role to be played on earth tomorrow, and while asleep, you are rehearsed and instructed in your part. The acceptance of the end automatically wills the means of realization. Make no mistake about this. If, as you prepare for sleep, you do not consciously feel yourself into the state of the answered wish, then you will take with you into the chamber of her who conceived you the sum total of the reactions and feelings of the waking day, and while asleep, you will be instructed in the manner in which they will be expressed tomorrow. You will rise believing that you are a free agent, not realizing that every action and event of the day is predetermined by your concept of self as you fell asleep. Your only freedom, then, is your freedom of reaction. You are free to choose how you feel and react to the day's drama, but the drama, the actions, events, and circumstances of the day, have already been determined. Unless you consciously and purposely define your attitude of mind with which you go to sleep, you unconsciously go to sleep in the composite attitude of mind made up of all feelings and reactions of the day. Every reaction makes a subconscious impression, and unless counteracted by an opposite and more dominant feeling, is the cause of future action. Ideas enveloped in feeling are creative actions. Use your divine right wisely. Through your ability to think and feel, you have dominion over all creation. While you are awake, you are a gardener selecting seed for your garden. But except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. John 12:24. Your conception of yourself as you fall asleep is the seed you drop into the ground of the subconscious. Dropping off to sleep feeling satisfied and happy compels conditions and events to appear in your world which confirm these attitudes of mind. Sleep is the door into heaven. What you take in as a feeling, you bring out as a condition, action, or object in space. So sleep in the feeling of the wish fulfilled. That was chapter 2 of Feeling is the Secret. Wow, this one, I forgot what an amazing chapter this was. There is so much value here, and so many little nuggets of wisdom that are easy to miss the first time you read this. He says, whatever you have in consciousness as you go to sleep is the measure of your expression in the waking 2/3 of your life on earth. Whatever you have in consciousness as you go to sleep, meaning the feeling you fall asleep in, dictates the waking 2/3 of your life. Now, I don't know if this is exactly true. It feels true to me. If we go by it as absolute truth, what Neville is saying here is the feeling you fall asleep in dictates basically your entire life. So if you fall asleep feeling like a failure, feeling like a loser, feeling regret, thinking about something that happened 5 years ago, thinking about something that you said to someone that made you look dumb, you're taking all of that into your subconscious and you're impressing. You're stamping your subconscious with feelings of failure, feelings of being a loser, feelings of being broke, feelings of dissatisfaction, feelings of anger, feelings of resentment. This is why he recommends in this chapter, above all, choose the feeling you fall asleep in. Make it a priority to fall asleep in the feeling of satisfaction, in the feeling of success. In my course, Unlock God Mode, I talk about this a lot, that it's so easy to just fall asleep in the feeling of success. You don't even have to imagine a specific visualization or a specific scene. You don't have to loop anything. You just trigger the feeling of success. What would it feel like if my whole day was a beautiful success? What would it feel like if I had accomplished every single thing I wanted to accomplish this year? And you just tap into that feeling of success. And what I love about it is it's so general. There's no counteracting force. You know, sometimes when, let's say, you wish for $1 million, your conscious mind is going to go, but you don't have it. I want $1 million, but I don't have it. Oh, but I am a millionaire. And then there's a little voice, but you're not. However, if you just cultivate the feeling of success, because every single person listening to this has had moments of success, every single person, no matter where you are now or what you're doing, you've had moments of success. Even today, there was probably something you did today that was successful. You listening to this audio, that's a success. You're educating yourself. Okay, so every single person listening to this can tap into a very general, non-specific feeling of success. And if you can discipline yourself, because it does take a little bit of discipline, as you fall asleep in that feeling. You don't ruminate about your day. You don't ruminate about what someone did to you or what you did to someone 10 years ago. You discipline your mind to feel success, feel wealth, Feel love. Feel gratitude. Feel satisfaction. Feel relief. That's another great feeling. Relief, because relief implies that something good has happened. Imagine you have a big bill that you have to pay and you have no money, and then someone sends you an extra $1,000. Ah, and you feel relief. Okay? So if you generate a feeling of relief for no reason, no reason at all, but you just feel relief. Ah, it subconsciously impresses you. It consciously impresses your subconscious that something good has happened because you're feeling relief. So try that out. Let me read some of the other quotes from Neville here. Proof that you are will follow the consciousness that you are. It will not precede it. This is the big one, guys. Proof that you are will follow the consciousness that you are. Let's say you want to be valuable. You want to feel worthy, okay? And you look to the external world for proof of your worthiness. But this is the exact opposite of what Neville is saying. Neville is saying, proof that you are worthy will follow the consciousness that you are worthy. Sometimes it's helpful with these phrases to insert a feeling, okay? Proof that you are rich will follow the consciousness that you are rich. Proof that you are confident will follow the consciousness that you are confident. Proof that you are talented at a specific skill will follow the consciousness that you are talented. Proof that you are an amazing lover will follow the consciousness that you are. You have to cultivate it inside first. It will not precede it. And I love this sentence from Neville. No matter what the problem is, no matter where it is, no matter whom it concerns, you have no one to change but yourself, and you have neither opponent nor helper in bringing about the change within yourself. This is really important, guys. You have neither opponent nor helper. You don't have a helper here. This is important. No one is coming to save you. No one is coming to save you. Even if you're the best manifester and you manifest the most incredible partner in your life, that partner is not going to save you from anything. As Neville says here, you have neither opponent nor helper. You don't have opponents. There is no force opposing you, but neither do you have a helper. It's all you. It's all your consciousness. And this should be liberating for you. This shouldn't be a sad fact or something to make you depressed. You have neither opponent nor helper. You have no one to change but yourself. Meaning, you don't have to depend on anyone. You don't have to wait for your lover to come into your life to change your life. You don't have to wait for a teacher or a mentor or for some knight in shining armor to come into your life. You have no one to change but yourself. All the power is within you. All the greats have been saying this for millennia, all the great teachers, and here is Neville's version of it. Every night as you drop off to sleep, feel satisfied and spotless. I love this sentence. You feel satisfied and you feel spotless. I didn't catch this the first time I read this book. The feeling of being spotless. Meaning, there's no stain on you, there's no mistakes, there's nothing to fix in you. You are spotless. Cultivate that feeling. This sentence is such a great visualization. As you fall asleep, feel satisfied and spotless. Imagine looking at your soul, your center, your energy, and seeing it spotless. And if you do see any problems or any stains on your soul, clear them. Imagine white light pouring through you and just clearing, dissolving the blocks, dissolving the stains, dissolving the dirt. There's a book by Kamal Ravikant called Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It. I recommend it. It's a great book. And in it, he says, when you love yourself, it's like cleaning the windows of your soul. The light is always shining through the windows. But there's a bit of dirt and grime that you pick up over the years. So what we're doing when we're loving ourselves is we're taking a cloth and we're cleaning the windows. We're just cleaning the grime off the windows. We're not creating light. We're not creating love. We're just removing the dirt so that the light that already exists can shine through. Isn't that a beautiful, beautiful metaphor? Free will is only freedom of choice. I love this phrase from Neville. Free will is only freedom of choice. By feeling your wish fulfilled and quietly relaxing into sleep, you cast yourself in a star role to be played on Earth tomorrow. And while asleep, you are rehearsed and instructed in your part. This is such an interesting visual. And I wonder how much of it is reality. That when we fall asleep, they say that our astral body disconnects from the physical body, still attached by a tether, but our astral body basically floats off into the astral realm and has adventures and experiences and basically has another school. While we're sleeping, our soul gets instruction. And I love that Neville kind of refers to that here. While asleep, you are rehearsed and instructed in your part. Now, I don't know if he meant this in the astral way that I'm describing it. He probably didn't. But I love that all these different teachings, they kind of point to the same direction. That you're not just sleeping. You're not just checking out of life. You're not just rest in your body. No. There's something much more important going on. Your soul is getting an education while you sleep. And what Neville here is saying is, depending on the mood you fall asleep in, depending on the scene that you imagine as you fall asleep, you get a different kind of education. So if you fall asleep in the consciousness of failure, you're rehearsed and instructed in how to fail more. And if you fall asleep in the consciousness of success, of being loved, of being wealthy, of being free, you will be instructed in all those things. And then I think what happens when you wake up is you now have this intuition, you have this subconscious knowledge of how to play your role on Earth. It looks like you're exactly the same person waking up, just going about your day. But in fact, you have slightly different code. You have slightly upgraded your timeline while you were asleep. And you're not the same person waking up. I like this idea that every time you go to sleep, it's like you die. And when you wake up, it's a new life. It looks like you're the same person with all your memories and everything seems to be chronologically working. But you may indeed be a completely new person in a new timeline with completely new instructions from your subconscious. As Neville says, while asleep, you are rehearsed and instructed in your part. Unless you consciously and purposely define the attitude of mind with which you go to sleep, you unconsciously go to sleep in the composite attitude of mind made up of all feelings and reactions of the day. This word composite is really interesting that he's using it here. It makes me think of the purity of materials. You know, when it's a composite, it means it's made out of different materials. It's not pure metal. It's not pure gold. It's not pure silver. It's a composite. And that's why it's cheaper. And I kind of like that metaphor of if you don't choose a specific feeling as you fall asleep, you're not going into it with a pure feeling. You're just going with a composite. Your morning was good, your lunchtime, you were moody, in the afternoon you had an argument, in the evening you relaxed, so you're just bringing all of that into your sleep. And it's not a pure intention, it's like a composite mix of good and bad, which is fine, which is okay, you have free will to do that. But it's so much better if you can hone a pure feeling, no matter how your day went. At the end of the day, as you fall asleep, you choose success. You choose the feeling of success and you hone in on that, like tuning into a frequency, tuning into a radio station, and see what happens. So don't bring a composite attitude of mind, as Neville says. Bring a golden mind, bring a silver mind. Bring that pure, pure, pure frequency into your sleep. Sleep is the door into heaven. What you take in as a feeling, you bring out as a condition, action, or object in space. Yes. Wow, what a chapter. I deeply enjoyed reading this. I forgot how powerful this chapter was. All right, onwards to chapter 3, prayer. Chapter 3, prayer. Prayer, like sleep, is also an entrance into the subconscious. When you pray, enter into your closet, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father which is in secret, and your Father, which is in secret, shall reward you openly. Matthew 6:6. Prayer is an illusion of sleep, which diminishes the impression of the outer world and renders the mind more receptive to suggestion from within. The mind in prayer is in a state of relaxation and receptivity, akin to a feeling attained just before dropping off to sleep. Prayer is not so much what you ask for, as how you prepare for its reception. Whatsoever things ye desire, when ye pray, believe that you have received them, and ye shall have them. Mark 11:24. The only condition required is that you believe that your prayers are already realized. Your prayer must be answered if you assume the feeling that would be yours were you already in possession of your objective. The moment you accept the wish as an accomplished fact, the subconscious finds means for its realization. To pray successfully, then, you must yield to the wish, that is, feel the wish fulfilled. The perfectly disciplined man is always in tune with the wish as an accomplished fact. He knows that consciousness is the one and only reality, that ideas and feelings are facts of consciousness and are as real as objects in space. Therefore, he never entertains a feeling which does not contribute to his happiness, for feelings are the causes of the actions and circumstances of his life. On the other hand, the undisciplined man finds it difficult to believe that which is denied by the senses, and usually accepts or rejects solely on appearances of the senses. Because of this tendency to rely on the evidence of the senses, it is necessary to shut them out before starting to pray, before attempting to feel that which they deny. Whenever you are in the state of mind, "I should like to, but I cannot," the harder you try, the less you are able to yield to the wish. You never attract that which you want, but always attract that which you are conscious of being. Prayer is the art of assuming the feeling of being and having that which you want. When the senses confirm the absence of your wish, all conscious effort to counteract this suggestion is futile and tends to intensify the suggestion. Prayer is the art of yielding to the wish, and not the forcing of the wish. Whenever your feeling is in conflict with your wish, feeling will be the victor. The dominant feeling invariably expresses itself. Prayer must be without effort. In attempting to fix an attitude of mind which is denied by the senses, effort is fatal. To yield successfully to the wish as an accomplished fact, you must create a passive state, a kind of reverie or meditative reflection similar to the feeling which precedes sleep. In such a relaxed state, the mind is turned from the objective world and easily senses the reality of a subjective state. It is a state in which you are conscious and quite able to move or open your eyes, but have no desire to do so. An easy way to create this passive state is to relax in a comfortable chair or on a bed. If on a bed, lie flat on your back with your head on level with your body, close the eyes, and imagine that you are sleepy. Feel, "I am sleepy, so very sleepy. In a little while, a faraway feeling, accompanied by a general lassitude and loss of all desire to move, envelops you. You feel a pleasant, comfortable rest, and not inclined to alter your position, although under other circumstances you would not be at all comfortable. When this passive state is reached, imagine that you have realized your wish. Not how it was realized, but simply the wish fulfilled. Imagine, in picture form, what you desire to achieve in life. Then feel yourself as having already achieved it. Thoughts produce tiny little speech movements, which may be heard in the passive state of prayer as pronouncements from without. However, this degree of passivity is not essential to the realization of your prayers. All that is necessary is to create a passive state and feel the wish fulfilled. All you can possibly need or desire is already yours. You need no helper to give it to you. It is yours now. Call your desires into being by imagining and feeling your wish fulfilled. As the end is accepted, you become totally indifferent as to possible failure, for acceptance of the end wills the means to that end. When you emerge from the moment of prayer, it is as though you were shown the happy and successful end of a play, although you were not shown how that end was achieved. However, having witnessed the end, regardless of any anticlimactic sequence, you remain calm and secure in the knowledge that the end has been perfectly defined. Wow, what a way to end chapter 3 of Feeling is a Secret by Neville Goddard. There's a lot of wisdom in this chapter. Let me read to you some of my highlights. Prayer is not so much what you ask for as how you prepare for its reception. What a beautiful line this is. It's not what you ask for. It's how you prepare for its reception. If you're asking for money, are you prepared to receive it? If you're asking for love, are you prepared to receive a partner? If you're asking for health, are you living a lifestyle that is in preparation for receiving that health? So when you pray for something, go to its reception and ask yourself, is my life truly aligned to receive this? I remember there was an interesting example in Rhonda Byrne's The Secret, where she was talking about how if you want a partner, you should clear half your closet. Because if a partner was to move into your apartment or your house, they need closet space for their things. So you make that space, you prepare for the reception of your dream. There's a lot of stories about Oscar winners practicing their Oscar speech even before they were nominated for anything, even before they were an actor. But they're already preparing for the reception of that dream. With money, you can apply this in so many ways. Instead of just thinking about getting money, why don't you study finance a little bit? Why don't you study investing? Say tomorrow I gave you $1 million. Do you know where you're going to invest it? Do you know how much of it is going to go towards property? How much of it is going to go towards stocks? Do you know how much of it you'll invest in yourself, in your own education and growth? Sometimes people ask for money, but they haven't even thought about how exactly they're going to use that money. They may know one or two things they want to buy, but actually being wealthy and imagining yourself, this is my portfolio of investments. This is my portfolio of real estate. This is my crypto portfolio. I mean, you have to think of your dream as if it's already in your life. And all you're doing right now is preparing for its reception. Now, that doesn't mean you go out and buy a bunch of stocks right now, but it means you mentally prepare yourself. Neville says, "The perfectly disciplined man is always in tune with the wish as an accomplished fact." Just this sentence alone, I mean, you can live on this sentence. The perfectly disciplined man is always in tune with the wish as an accomplished fact, meaning You want to walk through the world, and every time you think of a wish, you already know it's done. There is a certainty in your step. There's a certainty in your walk. There's a faith and trust that moves through you with every step you take, knowing that your desires are done and that you're just moving through time and space to get to them. There's a great quote from Kat Norton, who runs the Miss Excel brand, and she said, "I'm already a billionaire. I'm just moving through timelines to get there. I'm just moving through different timelines to get there, and I'm going through the fastest timelines." She also says, "Be 10 steps energetically ahead of where you currently are." So don't live in the now, surrounded by what you've already manifested, but be 10 steps ahead. Imagine you already have the lover, the money, the house, the career, the travel, the opportunities, the resources, the friends, the love. Imagine all of that is already present in your life. Be 10 steps ahead energetically. And be in tune with the wish as an accomplished fact. He knows that consciousness is the one and only reality, that ideas and feelings are facts of consciousness and are as real as objects in space. Therefore, he never entertains a feeling which does not contribute to his happiness, for feelings are the causes of the actions and circumstances of his life. You never attract that which you want, but always attract that which you are conscious of being. If you want wealth, but you're conscious of being poor, you attract more poorness. If you want health, but you're conscious of being unhealthy, you attract more of that. If you want love, but you're conscious of being lonely, you attract more loneliness. Nothing wrong with being alone, but if you feel lonely, that's what you're attracting. Are you conscious of what you're being? And this requires self-honesty. I know a lot of people in the manifestation community, they love to talk about delusion this, delusion that, stay deluded. I find the opposite to be far more helpful. You want to be honest, first of all. Because with honesty, you become more conscious. You're not deluding yourself that you're rich. You first get honest. Okay, my consciousness right now is one of scarcity. It's one of poverty. It's one of not enough. It's one of lack. And you first get real honest with yourself about where you are. And then once you have accepted that, once you have a very clear calibration on where you currently are, only then can you actually start improving that state. If you start deluding yourself about where you are without actually being conscious of your actual state, it's like driving a car with an empty gas tank, but you put a little sticky note over the indicator so that you don't see the empty gas tank. That's delusion in a negative sense. You know, so we're not trying to put the sticky note over your feelings. We're not trying to hide and mask who you actually are. You want that indicator. You want the indicator. You want to see if your gas is empty or full. You want to see if you're in the consciousness of scarcity or the consciousness of abundance. You need the indicator. That doesn't mean you give your power away to the indicator. That doesn't mean you freak out when you see the gas is running low. But you need the indicator, and that's what honesty is. You want to be absolutely honest with the consciousness of where you are right now. And then you work on where you want to be by bringing it into the present reality, by bringing that dream into the present consciousness. But first, get very clear about who you are right now and where you are. Don't put the sticky note over the gas indicator. Neville says, "Prayer is the art of assuming the feeling of being and having that which you want. Prayer is the art of yielding to the wish and not the forcing of the wish." Sometimes we try to force and we try to apply so much effort to manifesting. But Neville says it very simply here. Prayer is the art of yielding to the wish. And whenever I do the state akin to sleep, the feeling of the wish fulfilled exercises, the best times is when I'm yielding to it. It's not me forcing the feeling of the wish fulfilled. It's discovering it. I set the intention to discover a feeling. Let's discover a feeling of wealth. What might that feel like? And then you go into it, but you don't force it. You yield to it. It's like walking through a garden and discovering all the different flowers that are around you and taking them in. You want to give yourself that sweetness of time to walk through the garden, to fully feel the scents and the aromas of the flowers. And this is what I feel when I read, prayer is the art of yielding to the wish and not the forcing of the wish. We're not forcing the wish. We're allowing it. We're receiving it. We're discovering it. We're tuning into it. So the next time you practice one of Neville's teachings, choose a state, but then allow yourself to flow into that state. Don't force it. Neville says, whenever your feeling is in conflict with your wish, feeling will be the victor. The dominant feeling invariably expresses itself. Prayer must be without effort. Prayer must be without effort. I love that. So much wisdom in this chapter. To yield successfully to the wish is an accomplished fact. You must create a passive state, a kind of reverie or meditative reflection. When this passive state is reached, imagine that you have realized your wish, not how it was realized, but simply the wish fulfilled. Imagine in picture form what you desire to achieve in life, then feel yourself as having already achieved it. Yes. Yes, first you choose the state. What do you desire? You imagine it, and then you feel yourself as having already achieved it. And like Neville says, you don't imagine how it was realized. Simply the wish fulfilled. Go to the end. All you can possibly need or desire is already yours. You need no helper to give it to you. It is yours now. When I read this, I hear Neville's words, give it to yourself, you know? Give the feeling of love to yourself. You need no helper to give it to you. You don't need the external condition to show you love. You give that love to yourself now. You don't need the external condition of wealth to feel wealthy. You give yourself the feeling of wealth now. When you master this, when you really get a hold of this, you realize how much power you hold. It was never the thing outside of you. It was always you giving that feeling to yourself, sometimes using conditions as an excuse to feel it. But always it was you. All along, it was you. Neville says, call your desires into being by imagining and feeling your wish fulfilled. As the end is accepted, you become totally indifferent as to possible failure. For acceptance of the end wills the means to that end. When you emerge from the moment of prayer, it is as though you were shown the happy and successful end of a play, although you were not shown how that end was achieved. However, having witnessed the end, regardless of any anticlimactic sequence, you remain calm and secure in the knowledge that the end has been perfectly defined. You know what this reminds me of? The movie Titanic. When James Cameron was making Titanic, he knew that the audience knew the ship sank. Okay, so this wasn't a surprise. So what he did was he addressed it in the very beginning of the film, in the very opening frame. You already see the ship underwater. And then about 10 minutes into the film, there is a character that basically describes exactly how the ship sank. And they have this little simulation on the video screen. And what it did for the movie is that people can sort of relax. They know what's coming. they know the ship sinks, and then they can fully immerse themselves in the story of Jack and Rose, in the love story, while also having that little bit of thrill knowing that the ship will sink, and so there will be some action and drama. So for the men in the audience who maybe were not so much into the love story, they knew there was action coming. It's kind of an interesting parallel to what Neville is describing here is once you know the end, you can kind of relax and enjoy the journey. You can enjoy the action, the thrills, the drama, the ups and downs, because you know what happens in the end. Now, in the case of Titanic, the end is not necessarily happy. But in your case, you define a very happy ending for yourself. You go straight to the end of your movie, the movie of your life, and you imagine yourself achieving everything you want in your life. Whether it's career-related, financial, love, relationships, friends, you go to the end of the movie and you see yourself living that. And there will come a point where you've practiced seeing the end so vividly in your mind that you have this knowing, this certainty. You know what will happen at the end of the movie of your life. And you trust and you have faith and you hold the end in mind. You keep holding that vision of the end in your mind as you move through the movie of your life. And so whatever chaos happens in your life, whatever bridge of incidents you're being led upon, you remain calm and secure in the knowledge that the end has been perfectly defined. As Neville says, having witnessed the end, regardless of any anticlimactic sequence, you remain calm and secure in the knowledge that the end has been perfectly defined. What a beautiful chapter. Onwards to chapter 4. Chapter 4, Spirit Feeling. Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Zechariah 4:6. Get into the spirit of the state desired by assuming the feeling that would be yours were you already the one you want to be. As you capture the feeling of the state sought, you are relieved of all effort to make it so. For it is already so. There is a definite feeling associated with every idea in the mind of man. Capture the feeling associated with your realized wish by assuming the feeling that would be yours were you already in possession of the thing you desire, and your wish will objectify itself. Faith is feeling. According to your faith, feeling be it unto you. Matthew 9:29. You never attract that which you want, but always that which you are. As a man is, so does he see. To him that hath, it shall be given, and to him that hath not, shall be taken away. Matthew 13:12. That which you feel yourself to be, you are, and you are given that which you are. So assume the feeling that would be yours were you already in possession of your wish, and your wish must be realized. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Genesis 1:27. Let this mind be in you which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God. Philippians 2:5-6. You are that which you believe yourself to be. Instead of believing in God or in Jesus, believe you are God, or you are Jesus. He that believeth on me, the works that I do, shall he do also. Should be, he that believes as I believe, the works that I do, shall he do also. Jesus found it not strange to do the works of God, because he believed himself to be God. I and my Father are one. It is natural to do the works of the one you believe yourself to be. So live in the feeling of being the one you want to be, and that you shall be. When a man believes in the value of the advice given him and applies it, he establishes within himself the reality of success. So that's it for Feeling is the Secret. I love the sentence that he ends on. When a man believes in the value of the advice given him and applies it, he establishes within himself the reality of success. That's the secret right there. You believe in the value of the advice given to you, and you apply it. And by doing that, you establish within yourself the reality of success. What do most people do? They, number one, they don't always believe in the value of the advice given to them. They doubt it. They don't have faith in it. And number two, they don't apply it. And so they do not establish within themselves the reality of success. But you are different. You, dear listener, do believe in the value of Neville's advice, and you're going to apply it. You're going to apply it, and you're going to see beautiful results come out of this in your life. If you enjoyed my commentary on this book and you enjoyed my style of talking about reality creation, you might enjoy my course, Unlock God Mode. I designed Unlock God Mode specifically with the intention to give away my best tools, my best frameworks, and my best techniques for creating reality. It's a 30-day exploration of reality and how we can navigate the energies of life and how we can build our self-concept. So if you enjoyed this commentary, I invite you to check out the first 6 lessons of Unlock God Mode for free. You can go to unlockgodmode.xyz and that will give you free access to the first 6 lessons. And if you like them, you can purchase the full course. Every single person that's taken the course has given me beautiful feedback on it, and I'm really pleased with what I've been able to create here. I would love for you to experience this course. I put my heart and soul into it, and I know that it will benefit your life greatly. So if you're ready to change yourself, if you're ready to transform, if you're ready to work on yourself, check out Unlock God Mode at unlockgodmode.xyz.